expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Hey, CA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill that we have to pay? It's not our bill. We had no say. You don't serve us. You serve L.A. The time has come for 51 in the Jefferson State of Mind.
And that's right.
The time
has come for 51. That was Mike Smith. I like that song.
I know.
Mike does a great job on that.
He does. He's got two versions, too. The other version has drums and bass and all that good stuff. So.
Yep. Thank you, Mike, for putting that together. We appreciate it.
You betcha.
Good morning, Jefferson. We're wild-eyed, bushy-tailed, whatever you want to call it. We're here. Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. That's it.
Well, Sally got a new coffee maker yesterday. We always get coffee makers at... Sally is the garage sale queen.
You get them in the
world.
Summer? Is that when you get your coffee makers?
Yes. And Jenny Feller, who's her best friend, is here staying with us for a while. So they are the garage sale queens. The stuff they came home with yesterday. Jenny came home with a sewing machine, a really cute small one, for her granddaughter. And the lady, after she told her she wanted it for her granddaughter, just gave it to her.
Oh, no.
And Sally comes home with a brand new, is it Krupp's coffee maker? $2.
Really?
Yeah, well, Sally got me the yard sale. That was a quarter.
She overpaid.
That's what she said.
She wants her money back.
50 cents, come on.
She wants her money back.
Anyway, tomorrow night, we have our Jefferson meeting at 5:30.
We do?
Yes, and if you're new and you want to learn about Jefferson, Chris Kellstrom does a great job there. We will be at 2570 Bonneview Road at a church that will remain nameless. And
only church on Bonneview Road.
Yeah. Anyway, so we will be there, and we are going to be showing at 6 o'clock the Ammon Bundy, I guess it was seminar that he did up in Wairika, and it was a dinner, and it was fabulous. And Robert Exter, who always does a fabulous job when it comes to filming these things, just incredible quality, filmed it. And thank you, Robert. Great job, as usual.
Well done.
And this will bring tears to your eyes. You can hear... Tomorrow night at 2570 Bonneview Road, at 6 o'clock, you can hear exactly what happened, the truth, all of it. And the tough thing is, if you didn't hear the program last week, you might be really missing some of this in the fact that Mark Baird had dinner with Ammon Bundy. There was a lot of things that went on, and it was just absolutely wonderful. So I've got to tell you that you need to see this this particular film tomorrow night.
Well done. Robert did an outstanding job. And Mr. Bundy, hats off, man. Hat tip to him big time. And hang in there.
Well, we already have both lines full.
And if you're new to our radio station, my name is Wynn Carpenter, and my buddy here is Terry Raposa. We didn't say that when we came on.
We didn't.
We are doing things differently, I guess.
Well, we're kind of excited about the guest we have coming on. And we're going to bring him on right now. This is one of our attorneys who is a real patriot, somebody who's been fighting the fight for a long time, Gary Zerman. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Gary.
Fine. Good morning, gentlemen. How's the weather up there? We got a bright, sunny day down here.
We do, too.
Starting to heat up in Southern California.
Oh, wait. We can top that heat any day of the week.
Yeah, we were 102 yesterday. 102 yesterday.
Wow.
Oh, that's a cool day.
Welcome to the Mediterranean climate we live in.
That's right. There actually was a day a few years back when we were actually hotter than Iraq.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's a true story.
Oh, wow. So, how are you doing, Gary?
Fine. I'm here to answer your questions and bring you up to date, do a status report on our case, Citizens for Fair Representation versus the Secretary of State, Alex Padilla, where we're trying to... address the problem of lack of representation in California. It's been 155 years, and we've added 39.5 million people to the state. but the legislature has not added one representative to the state. So what's happened is everybody's vote is continually being diluted, and therefore that's how our the will of the people is recognized, is through representation. And in fact, in 1879, the legislature put in the Constitution an amendment to permanently fix the state Senate at 40 members and the Assembly at 80 members. That thus cuts off the power of the people, and that's despite the original California Constitution in 1849 in the first article, which was entitled Declaration of Rights. The second section was all political powers inherent in the people. Government is instituted for their protection, security, and benefit, and they have the right to alter or reform it when the public good may require. So the legislature was placed first in the Constitution because it's closest to the people, and again, the lower house in particular, in the federal system, the House of Representatives, and in our state of California, the Assembly, that is the pulse and the lifeblood of the people. That's how our will gets recognized, is through the legislature. And initially, both the federal system and California started out as population increased, we added representatives. But then they have both stopped, and what has happened is you've cut off the power of the people in the legislature, and at the same time, it's been led to grow in leaps and bounds in both the other two departments or articles, Article 2, the executive, and Article 3, the judiciary. They've grown in leaps and bounds while the power of the people, the legislature, has been cut off. And so what's happened is those two branches have leapfrogged over the people, the legislative branch, and we're now at the back end. And so our will, our voices aren't being heard. We really don't have a seat at the table, and our legislature, our government, has become an oligarchy. And so that's why we have brought this lawsuit, and we've also intervened in one in ours is in a federal district court in Sacramento, and we've also are intervening in one in the D.C. District Court in Washington, D.C., called Laverne versus U.S. House of Representatives. And that case has to do with Article the First. After we had the Continental Congress and established the Articles of Confederation, it was thought that the national government didn't have enough power. So then we had a constitutional convention, and that was, in fact, signed and went to the states to be ratified. And then the people thought, well, we're giving too much power to the federal government, and we want something in the Constitution to make sure the rights of the people are protected. And so they had the Federalist Papers and Anti-Federalist Papers that went back and forth and fought that out, and eventually the Constitution was ratified. But with those Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, it led to the submission of a series of amendments to the Constitution that were called the Bill of Rights. They talked about submitting 19, but actually 12 were submitted, and they were termed articles for some reason instead of amendments. And Article 1 had to do with representation. And as the legislature or the population grew, they were supposed to, in fact, definitely increase the amount of representatives. Well, that was stopped in 1911 without much explanation, and, in fact, codified by a statute in 1929. So in 1911, we caught up, capped the federal government with 435 representatives, and we've now added 25 million people to the federal government or the nation. And again, we have not added a single representative. And as I said, the other branches have grown in leaps and bounds and leapfrogged over the legislature. In fact, in the federal system, we have twice as many federal judges as we have representatives. And here in California, we have a total of 120 representatives, 40 senators, and 80 assembly members. But we have 2,000 judges. And so the will of the people now is at the back end of the country, and both the federal constitution and California's constitution, the preamble start out, we the people, we're supposed to be sovereign. Well, when they cut off and cap the legislature, they're cutting off our power, and we're turning it into an oligarchy and a government of the government, for the government, and by the government, and we're getting the wrong end of the stick instead of being the tree trunk, and the body. The mere branches of government are dictating to us.
We have a couple questions, Gary. One of them being, as most people know, that at least a lot of our listeners know, that there was a motion for the three-judge court that was filed recently. And she was supposed to give us a little something back on June 1st. And you had made the comment that she vacated the hearing rather than just canceling the hearing. Can you explain to the folks the difference between that and what that really is?
Well, you're right. Initially, we had, even before that, when we amended our complaint and filed a proposed second amended complaint, we filed a formal motion to the court to convene a three-judge court. We had done that earlier, and she initially granted it. That was back in
August the 5th, 2017.
Okay. And then the Attorney General made a motion for reconsideration and just filed a rather paltry motion that really was lacking specific facts and law for the court to reconsider its opinion. Well, the court initially granted was going to have a hearing on that, and then she just took that off calendar. So then we filed a second amended complaint. With that, we filed a motion to convene the three-judge court. And that was scheduled to be heard on June 1st. So the way it works is a party files a motion, the opposing parties get to file an opposition, and then the moving party gets to file a reply. So even before we finished filing our documents, the reply, the court came in and issued a minute order sui sponte. That means on the court's own motion or the court's own direction without the parties moving the court, because we're supposed to have an adversarial system where the parties advocate their cases and the court is supposed to be neutral. So the court did this on its own motion, vacating the hearing. And actually what the court did is vacate the oral argument of the hearing and said that it's going to decide the matter on the papers submitted and filed by the parties. And so we're awaiting the court's decision, because now it is today, June 3rd, and the hearing was supposed to be on the 1st. So it wasn't per se vacated and canceled, just the oral argument portion of it was. And so we're waiting for the court to issue the ruling on that.
Could she?
And we hope that she'll rule in our favor, give us the three-judge court. Then we have a motion to dismiss our complaint with prejudice. The Attorney General, brought by the Attorney General's office on behalf of Secretary of State Padilla, they did this once before, and we opposed that, and we had a hearing on September 8, 2017, and the court heard oral argument on there after the parties filed their papers, and the court gave us an opportunity to amend the complaint. She found there were some insufficiencies in our allegations, and we filed the second amended complaint, and with that filed the motion to convene the three-judge court. So what we would like is to get the three-judge court, and then this motion that Secretary of State Padilla has filed should be determined by a three-judge court. There's a special statute in the federal system, 28 U.S.C. 224, and that's where there's special cases that are so important that they should be heard by a three-judge court as opposed to a single judge. And in 1976, that statute was narrowed because they thought it was somewhat being abused. And one thing they kept, though, was apportionment cases. And so ours is an apportionment case, and so it should get a three-judge panel. The law is pretty clear. There's a case called Shapiro versus McManus that was written by Justice Scalia, and it said that unless your case is frivolous, wholly, or constitutionally insubstantial, then when that request is filed, the judge is required, it says the court shall send the matter over to the presiding judge of that circuit to appoint two other judges to be on the case to make the three-judge panel. Now, again, the court initially did that with our first motion request for the three-judge panel. And so we're waiting her ruling, and we hope she will do that again. Of course, it's being opposed by the Secretary of State. But so the matter was not, you know, totally vacated or totally canceled. The matter is still on the court's calendar, and instead of having an oral argument there, the court's just going to determine on the papers. More and more, the courts are doing things like that, and they'll even do that sometimes in on appellate cases. And so there's a problem that is system-wide that we've kind of opened the floodgates in litigation, and there's so many issues that are out there. I think we've made a lot of wrong decisions doing that. I think we should be able to limit. We're supposed to have a limited government, which means our law should also be limited. But assuming you're going to do that, you need to facilitate it, and there's no way it can be facilitated because it's just so open-ended anymore. And then another thing from the Supreme Court, too often we get 5-4 decisions that are 100 pages long with the various judges joining in part, dissenting in part, concurring in part. And the purpose of the law is to provide a large measure of certainty and clarity, and we're not getting that from the judiciary. Nor the legislature.
Now, we have a little information on the judge, and we have some people who do know our judge, and apparently what all the sources have said is basically her, the time she's taking is fairly normal for her. But there's a caveat there in the fact that on August the 5th, 2017, she asked for the three-judge court, and could she come as part of her July 1st position, or excuse me, June 1st position, could she come back and say, okay, guys, I want to hear an oral argument? Could that happen?
Yeah, she could ask for that, and she could also, we could possibly have her say something at the 6:15 hearing that she still has some questions and she would like us to address those, and sometimes they even request the parties to provide further briefing on an issue.
Now, is there a chance that she could vacate the 6:15 hearing as well?
Yeah, they could. She could do that. These courts have quite an immense amount of power, and they also have immunity, and there's not much oversight on them regarding disciplinary complaints. That's one of the problems, is that we're supposed to have three independent co-equal branches that are both that all three of them have two duties. One is to uphold the sanctity of the Constitution, and two, protect our rights. And there's numerous cases and, you know, incidents out there that show that our rights have been ignored, abused, oppressed.
So, again, it could be justice delayed, justice denied, once again, right?
Sometimes, yes. It's been said that... sometimes the wheels of justice grind slowly, I can give you a number of examples where they not only have ground slowly, but they've fallen off.
Yeah, that's the way
it feels.
There's
a recent case out of, I've got it here. Let me see if I can find it on the computer. But it came out of the Cincinnati, Ohio, Kentucky area.
It was made on May 2nd, as a matter of fact. I believe it was May 2nd, and they just rolled on at the 31st of May. Isn't that correct?
Is that the Fen-Phen case?
Yep.
Yeah, Fen-Phen was this herbal supplement that was supposed to be good for you, and actually it caused a lot of harm to people. And so there was a big settlement, class action of $200 million, and it allowed the plaintiffs to the plaintiff's attorney to get the money, and they were supposed to disperse it to their clients, but seems like they turned into pirates and bandits and took the settlement. And the settlement happened in, I think, 2001, and it's now 2018, and they're still trying to get their money.
Wow.
A number of attorneys were finally disbarred, but they had a big bag of tricks and played delay tactic, fraudulent filings one after another. And I believe some of the court personnel and judges and bar associations turned a blind eye to a lot of this, and some of them even participated in it.
Gary, we probably should go to a break here. You can stay with us, can't you, my friend?
Sure, sure.
Okay, well, before we go, folks, I want to let you know that you can call in at 605-4567, area code 530-605-4567, if you have a question for Gary Zerman. And I believe we need to go to a break, but time has come.
4:51.
When I turned 18, I couldn't wait to vote. After all, voting is a privilege for all Americans, right? Then I did the math. Did you know that the northern third of California only has 3 out of 80 seats in the Assembly and 3 out of 40 seats in the Senate? Northern California has no representation, and my vote doesn't count. Splitting from California and forming the state of Jefferson is the only remedy. Please visit SOJ51.net for more information. Please donate now to help restore representation.
It is tough establishing a new business in California, and even tougher if you're trying to understand the multiple laws that seem to have no other reason but to make your life harder. How do you deal with those legal hurdles while trying to build this new business or expand an existing one? By having your own qualified expert assist you. Douglas Wright, attorney at law, specializes in business law and is well versed on the morass of legal questions facing a California business. Douglas Wright, a professional corporation, 530-243-6000 or douglaswrightlaw.com.
Tobacco and Brew has been a sponsor here on KCNR 1460 since we started the station 8 years ago. A long-standing Reading tradition, Tobacco and Brew is locally owned, backs our veterans, and does so much more for this community. It's located at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Check out their new vines, new products, new briar pipes, and of course, the famous walk-in humidor. Come in and see the newly remodeled Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive, open 7 days a week.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name. Knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Surrounded by strangers I thought were my friends, find myself further and further from my home, and I guess I lost my way. There were oh so many roads. I was living to run and running to live, never worried about pain or even how much I owe. Searching for shelter again and again.
song. Singer.
Good song.
Great song. That's courtesy of Rally Sally. She plays the stuff in the afternoon.
There you go.
We hang out.
Yep.
Plays her music. She's laughing right now. She is. And she was singing with that, too.
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
She's always singing
with her
music. She's
always singing with that, yeah. It's beauty to behold.
There you go. From afar.
Gary, my good friend, are you there with us?
I'm here, gentlemen. I found that case, and let me just connect up with that and give the citation to it. That case we were referring to regarding the Fen-Phen litigation is Connie McGirr, McGirr, versus Thomas F. Rehme, Rehme, and it involves this big law firm. The main perpetrator is Stanley Chesley. Let me just read briefly the operative paragraph from page 3 of the decision. In 2001, the parties negotiated a settlement over the $200 million settlement of the case, and the case was dismissed, all unbeknownst to and without the approval of the class action plaintiffs. American Home Products, that was the defendant in the underlying case, left it to Chesley, that was the main attorney, and the other lawyers to divvy up the settlement among the class members as they saw fit. Trusting the attorneys with such a task proved to be a mistake. So the fraud began. And I encourage your listeners out there to go and look at that case if they want a window into what's going on in the legal system. And if you're uninitiated or a novice to the legal system, I think you'll be horrified by what you read there and the real state of our legal system.
No doubt. Hey, Gary, we have a buddy online here, Mark Baird. Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Lynn. Hi, Terry. How you doing, Gary?
Good, good.
I'm off work, and so I'm very interested in listening to Gary, but I wanted to ask one question. Did the Alabama apportionment case get a three-judge court? Do you know that? And if so, will that help to set any kind of precedence? I know Eugene's case got a three-judge court. If the Alabama case gets a three-judge court, both of those are definitely general harm. I mean, in the Alabama case, they're saying illegal shouldn't be counted for the purposes of apportionment, and everybody in the United States is disadvantaged by that. So I'm wondering if any of these will give weight to our argument that our case deserves a three-judge court, or is this system so corrupt that the people in this case will be denied justice?
I don't know the exact answer to your question. Terry might know because we both had flagged that case and it was just filed. I don't know if they've appointed the three-judge court yet, but your point is well taken. These are apportionment cases, and that special statute, 28 U.S.C. 2284, is pretty perfunctory, and unless the case is frivolous or wholly constitutionally insubstantial, it's just an administrative task that the judge immediately appoint the three-judge court. And as you pointed out, the Laverne case, they got a three-judge court. We initially got a three-judge court, and then the court pulled it back. And the papers we filed make out all those points that this is just an administrative task. These apportionment cases are so important that they should go to a three-judge court.
Yeah, that was Mo Brooks, and I believe that I'm not sure if he's a senator, a senator, or a
congressman.
He is a congressman, okay. And yeah, I mean, the thing is that, you know, California is now going to be taking away people in the House of Representatives away from Alabama. I mean, that's the deal, because of the census position that we have, and we can, everybody and anybody that's over here illegally, aliens.
Well, and isn't it kind of remarkable that, you know, we've had decades of dereliction of duty followed by decades of dysfunction with this immigration issue, and a total failure by the government. All they had to do was enforce the laws that they passed. and yet we the people are being harmed by that. And then the court comes in, like in the Evanwall case, is similar to this Alabama
right.
case.
Right.
And they were alleging there that their apportionment and their representatives are being jiggered or kind of out of balance because of illegal aliens
right.
that shouldn't be here in the country to begin with if our laws are to have any meaning. Yet they lost in the Evanwell case, but now the same issue is being brought up in Alabama.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if the Evanwell case was a little bit different because I think – wasn't the Evanwell case, they were arguing that the state of Texas did not construct its apportionment scheme properly. And I think that what Thomas was saying in that case is states can essentially do whatever they want. However, I think in the Alabama case, what they're saying is that the state of Alabama is disproportionately affected by states like California who unfortunately own about a third of the illegal aliens in the United States. And since they're counted for congressional apportionment, I believe it was that Alabama was going to lose a seat in Congress so that the illegal aliens in Southern California could get another seat.
Right. That's a finer point put on that. But, yeah, basically they were both cases have to do with illegal aliens, which if the word illegals to have any meaning they shouldn't be here.
I agree. Hey, thanks.
And why is it that, you know, we are punished, we the people, we're supposed to be sovereign, and I think across the board everybody has to admit that the government has repeatedly failed to do its job, and these are having a crucial impact on our whole country, the makeup of our country, how our money is being spent. And what's so amazing is that both California and the federal government are grossly in debt. Not only are they making wrong decisions, they're not even paying for them.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, Mark, thank you, buddy. Wynn has a question for you.
Yeah, I do. We've been in contact with a lot of folks throughout Jefferson that want to support. They want to support in every way possible. The big way of supporting is being there for the court date. So we had to do a mass scramble to cancel for the visit to the courthouse on the 1st. So are we looking to have the same kind of scenario happen for the 15th if she decides that she wants to vacate it or what have you last minute? Because people are spending a lot of money. They're scheduling time off from work. They're scheduling bus rentals. They're doing all kinds of stuff that it truly impacts all of us again. And we want to make sure that we are able to get the word out in a timely fashion so that we can let people know. So what is your thought on that? I mean, because I know that you and Scott and others were going to be flying into Sacramento.
Sure.
So that was going to be – that was a scheduling faux pas there with, you know, her – well, not faux pas, but a mix-up that where she ends up vacating it, then you guys have to cancel everything. So I know it affects everybody.
Well, you're correct. And so essentially what you're asking is – are we going to have the oral argument hearing on the 15th? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, I'll have to answer that. This is one of the unfortunate things you learn in law school. The answer is a definite maybe.
Yeah.
Again, I told you in the beginning the purpose of the law is to provide a large measure of certainty to people so they in clarity, so we know how to govern our actions. But you're right. The court has the power to, at the last minute, you know, say the hearing's off. In fact, the court did that. We had a hearing scheduled, I believe it was for August 24th or 25th.
Yep.
And Mr. Staffney, my co-counsel, had flown down from Washington State, and I had flown up from Los Angeles to Sacramento, and we both were there a few days before preparing for the hearing, and I think it was like less than 24 hours or right around 24 hours, the court unilaterally continued or canceled that hearing or part of it. And so we'd flown up there essentially for nothing. I mean, we got something out of it that we focused and sharpened our sword regarding our arguments. But the court had to have known, you know, that we'd flown down there, and that was last minute. Another thing in this case, when we have these scheduled hearings, I've made requests to the court's clerk to ask the judge to move the hearing to courtroom one, which is a larger courtroom, due to the number of plaintiffs we have, as well as their friends and family coming down and other concerned citizens. This case, as Mr. Staffney has termed it, is the Baker versus Carr of the 21st century. And Baker versus Carr is a 1961 or 1962 case that allowed the court, or the court decided to enter this political thicket. Prior to that time, they said apportionment is simply the function of the legislative branch. They have this power to determine the makeup of the legislature. And we largely agree with that it is largely the province of the legislature up and until the point that you have cases like ours and like in Baker versus Carr. In Baker versus Carr in Tennessee, they had failed to really recognize the shift in population for over 60 years and hadn't really changed apportionment there. And a lot of people had moved from the farm areas to the cities, and yet the farm areas had an inordinate amount of representation, and the cities lacked it. Now today things are reversed, and it seems like the cities have more power, and the rural areas are lacking representation. And so in that case, the court said it's time to enter the political thicket, and that the case was not a political question, that they had standing, and that the matter was justiciable, and that the court should hear these matters and come up with a remedy. And that led to Reynolds versus Sims and the one man, one vote. And now what's happened, though, is from those cases, the court was really concerned of making districts very equal. And, in fact, in California, we have, I think it was in 2008, we came up with this, the legislature and the voters, with this California Redistricting Commission. And they do a tremendous job of making sure that these districts are equal. But the problem is they're so large that everybody equally has a lack of representation, because now, again, in California, it's been 155 years, 39.5 million people added to the state, but we haven't added one representative. And so our districts have gone from, for the assembly, from 5,000 people to now one representative for 5,000 people, now to one representative to 500,000 people. And those districts are so large that the relationship has totally broken down. They tell you to contact your representative. Good luck with that unless you're very well connected or have money. And another problem is what happens is with these limited representatives, they're increasing their staff. Well, there's a fundamental principle of life that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. What you can do directly, do directly. So instead of appointing more and more staff members to these limited reps, get rid of the staff members or turn them into representatives and reduce the size of the districts down to 30,000, 40,000, 50,000. And then you have a community, and more people would engage in politics because they think they had a chance to have a seat at the table and have their voice heard. The way it is now, we have turned both the federal government and the California, the federal legislature and the California legislature into oligarchies, where you have to be moneyed or well connected, be a party, you know, adherent and putting the party above the country to run for these offices. And contrary to that, one of the best states is New Hampshire. They're about a million people, and they have 400 members in their lower chamber. So all you have to do in New Hampshire to run for office is plop down a small fee and get 2,000, and the district sizes are 4,000, and get 2,001 votes, and you're now a representative. And that allows anybody to run for office, allows third parties to get involved in the process so they have competitive elections.
Yeah, you know, and that's such a great point, especially on both levels, on the state and federal level. On Friday, I know that our congressman was on the radio on this particular station, and he had mentioned that John Cox was one of the reasons he was behind John Cox. Not all of them, but one of them was, is because John Cox had the money to get there. And when you have to have the money to get there, and that's admitted by your own congressman, that's a sad state of affairs, my friend, isn't it?
Well, what did Jesse Unruh, famous California politician, I think he was Speaker of the Assembly for a long time, and what did he say? Money's the mother's milk of politics, and that's, in fact, a truism.
Yep. Anyway,
You know, another thing that's really upsetting is, you know, in California, this problem has been, you know, evident. I mean, a lot of citizens don't know it. They think that we continue to increase our representatives as the population increases. But to the political class, this has been well known because in 1990, mm-hmm. the former Speaker of the Assembly in California from 69 to 71, Robert Monahan, he later went on to be in, I believe, the Reagan administration.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the Speaker of the Assembly, and he wrote a book, California's Disappearing Representation, and everything that we're saying, he wrote in that book. So his colleagues were made well aware. If you didn't know that just from the sheer increase in population and the capping of the legislature.
Gary?
And he told them of this harm. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've got to go to a break real quick here. If you'd hang with us. wait a second. Maybe I want to use a different terminology. If you stay with us. then we also have Terry on the other side from El Dorado, Terry G, and we'll pick you up, Terry G, on the other side of the break. Time has come.
For 51.
Did you know that Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution lays out the framework for the state of Jefferson's plan to split California? A state can be formed from the land within another state if the state legislature and Congress approve it with a simple majority vote. 51% is all it takes. Your vote doesn't count in Northern California. California is broken and the time has come for 51. Please visit SOJ51.net and donate now to show your support.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and, of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Hey, you getting hungry?
Yeah, hungry as a bear.
Oh, yes, the eternal question. What's for lunch?
Fast food?
Nah, I want something that didn't come in a bag.
Someplace fancy.
No, I want a place that has a down-home atmosphere, serves good portions, and has consistently good food.
My friend, you just described Black Bear Diner. They started just up the road in Mount Shasta. They have carried that feeling of home-cooked meals at a great price to more than 100 locations.
They're on Hilltop Drive in Reading.
Brrr.
What's that?
It's time to feed the inner bear.
Black Bear Diner.
Young. song, Sally. All right, we're back. Here we are, Terry Raposa, Wynn Carpenter, and our producer, Ashley. Gary. Terry G.
Yeah, Terry.
Terry G., what's your question, my dear, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Terry.
Welcome to the program, hon. Are you there?
Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you, Gary, for being on the show today.
You're welcome.
My question is, if you could explain a little more about the Laverne case, but also, has he, in fact, had any hearings yet, or what is the status of that case?
Okay, yes, they have had some hearings, and his case is about Article the First, which was one of the amendments initially submitted. In fact, he has written a book called Article the First. You can do an internet search on that, on Eugene, E-U-G-U-N-E, Laverne, L-A-V-E-R-G-N-E, and you can get it connected to his book and what his arguments are. At the time, Thomas Jefferson was Secretary of State, and he, in the book, or you can possibly get it off the internet, that Thomas Jefferson prepared a handwritten chart where he put the 12 amendments, I believe, on the vertical axis, and on the horizontal axis he put the various states, and as they ratified the amendments, he would check off and put that in there. And there was some problem with both Article the First and Article the Second. Article the Second had to do with congressional pay, and it was later found that it, in fact, had been ratified while it was ignored for quite a while. It fell through the cracks, and that has been ratified and, in fact, adopted and implemented. And the same thing, Mr. Laverne went to the various state archives because it was close at the end, and back when this occurred, and they didn't think they got the additional vote they needed to ratify it. In fact, they did. He got the original documents, copies of those from the various archives, and it, in fact, was ratified, and that is required to now be implemented. And one of the things in his lawsuit he filed that when President Trump took office, and this would have been true with every president, you know, going back, that they have to implement this article and increase the representations to have a proper quorum for the government to go forward. Mr. Laverne is saying the proper quorum under Article the First, which would, should have been in the Constitution as the original First Amendment, what had happened is, again, Article 1 and 2, they didn't think that initially those were ratified, and so Article 3 through 12 became the Bill of Rights, Amendment 1 through 10. And so following our Constitution, following the law, these were in fact ratified, and they should be implemented. When President Trump took office, there should be 6,000 representatives. And that's what Mr. Laverne is asking, that the court recognize Article the First and implement it and increase the House of Representatives.
Did he get his three-judge court?
Yes, immediately he had a three-judge court.
Wow.
One of the problems he's having there is that he, although he's an attorney, he's in pro se, and they do not have an attorney representing the five plaintiffs, an official attorney. And then what I think violates equal protection, if you're a pro se, pro per attorney in the federal system, in some of these district courts, they will not allow you to use the electronic filing system. So he still has to do paper copies, and there's been a real problem with getting those filed. And when he gets them filed, the court has been delaying them. It's kind of outside the system. And, you know, systems are good until you have a glitch. And so there's been numerous delays in his case in getting these matters heard.
Do you have any other questions, Terry?
No, I just wanted to thank Gary for the clarity. It's been a real education learning about the judicial system, I'll tell you. So anyway, thank you guys again, and have a wonderful Sunday.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
We're going to also have this program so everybody knows. This will be put out. Sally's going to get this out to everybody, the link on this. You can go on this, and if you're listening, make sure you let all your friends know, everybody you know. You can go to KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. You'll go to lineups and archives. You'll find our program as you scroll down. You'll find us on Sunday morning at 9 a.m., Jefferson State of Mind. When you go on that, you move to the right, you hit the archive podcast, and you will pick up this program. In fact, this program usually, actually, what is it, about 5-10 minutes after we're done? Yeah, about 5-10 minutes after we're done, Ashley gets that done there, and we're ready to roll. So you figure by 10:15, you can have your friends listening to this, and of course, being archived and podcasted, that means you can listen to it a year from now. So the real deal is that we need to get the word out on this thing. Gary, great program. We have about we still have about 5 minutes left. So if you have a question, make it a quick one. But it's 605-4567, 605-4567. Area code 530.
Hey, Gary, quick question again. So when I asked about, you know, all the people going to the court to witness, to support, to be there, to do whatever, what's your gut tell you? I mean, yeah, we want people to go, but we don't want them to, you know, do all this work and go to this effort and financial impact on themselves individually if, indeed, the judge will pull it like she just did on our June 1st date.
I think the court will hold the hearing, the oral argument hearing. I can't guarantee anything, you know.
Right.
But I think the court, would be embarrassed not to. I mean, you know, she's risking, if the media would report on this, saying what's going on here. In fact, in the request that I have made to her, I cite the court's own website that says access to all, and they invite citizens to come in and sit in their court proceedings to watch and learn about the legal and judicial system. And, you know, one thing that's a real problem is that all three branches, are proliferating all these platitudes, you know, that for the people, public service. And then you find out that, a lot of that is just lip service. Again, the Constitution starts out, we the people, both the federal and California, we're sovereign. Government's supposed to be our servant, but the whole system has been inverted by them giving themselves immunity. How could the legislature or the Republican or Democratic Party in California or in the federal system or the House of Representatives actually argue that they're representing the people when they have capped the legislature? Again, the lower chamber is the pulse, the lifeblood of the people. That's how our representation is actualized. That's how our rights are recognized, but they have cut off the power of the people, and we're, you know, being excluded from our own government. These legislative districts are so large, they're dysfunctional.
Right,
they don't
right.
work. People are dropping out of the political system. They don't believe in it.
Hey, Gary,
and that's really, you know, a dire situation and can become very dangerous. In
yep.
fact, in California, we have this Cal exit where the state wants to secede from the union.
Hey, Gary,
you remember
hey,
when
Gary.
That last occurred, and that was with South Carolina leaving the union and caused a civil war, and the other southern states joined, and again, the Civil War. Look at the carnage that occurred there.
Oh, yeah, right. Gary, we have a caller. Ron, you've got 1 minute.
You got to make it quick, buddy.
Make it
sorry
quick,
about
Ron.
That.
Okay, I can make it very quick. I have my question is,
I'm sorry,
have
I can't hear you.
CD or DVD on Mark, on any one of Mark Baird's lectures or when he talks? I'd like to, if I could, I'd like to buy one. I've got people.
Okay, well, those are available at the meeting, Ron, on Monday nights, and you can give me a call later on.
Okay.
Hey,
all
right, buddy.
Hey, Gary,
you.
I also got a question. Can we sue the judge for misconduct?
You can, but they have an absolute defense. called the doctrine of absolute judicial immunity, and only two things need to happen there, or requisites. One, that they had jurisdiction, which they she clearly has in this case, and two, she performed a judicial act.
Okay.
And even where those are right on the button, it's kind of upsetting when there are abuses, but they even widely construe both jurisdiction and judicial act way beyond reason in cases that shouldn't apply. And that's the problem. Like, the Founding Fathers knew that power would be abused, mm-hmm. and that liberty and truth.